Who are you all?
The Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders.
Excellent, excellent. So are you guys excited? I mean, this is media day. The cameras are everywhere, and it's where the stars come out. Have you guys seen any stars that you saw outside of the game of football walking around here for the last couple of days?
Well, we actually just flew in today.
Oh,
so
nice.
So we've only been here for a couple of hours.
Excellent.
We ran into Maria Menounos at the airport on the way here because she was coming from Philly to Minnesota.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know who's going to be here? I think on Thursday he has his press conference. That's Justin Timberlake. You got that got a massive pom-pom shake.
Pink, she is coming to sing the national anthem, and she's from Philly.
She is? That's right. She's going to be here. Did you see her? Anybody see her at the Grammys? She was excellent.
Fantastic.
Okay, now there's bets being taken in Vegas as to who Justin Timberlake is going to invite on stage. Anybody have any guesses? Any guesses?
I say the Eagles cheerleaders.
You could be the new NSYNC. Do you know the bye-bye-bye dance? You got to bye-bye-bye. So you got it. You got it. I could do it with the best of you guys. Can I have you read a liner for the show? Would that be okay? So you can say this is from the Philadelphia... I put the Philadelphia Eagles, but it's the Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders.
Okay. Hi, this is Marissa from the Philadelphia Eagles, and you're listening to John Wallach, the gap-tooth magician. And he loves sports and hates the dentist.
That's right. Now, can you say, gap-tooth John?
Gap-tooth John! Gap-tooth John!
Thank you very much. Gap-tooth
John!
It's true. He has gap in his teeth. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. We are on Radio Row over here at the Mall of America, a place we only spent 4 hours at yesterday. It was quite miraculous.
Unlike the 10 that you almost clocked in on Tuesday?
Oh, Tuesday I was here, baby. I got the lay of the land. This hour is brought to you by ACP Facility Services. But before we went on the show, because I have been given guff before for basically Phoenix for looking disheveled in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
People speculating maybe what I had done the night before. And now I'm to understand that Felger, I believe yesterday, was in such pain that he had to apologize to the staff at his hotel.
Oh, because
his hotel room
gave the carpet a gift.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what happened. I don't know where it happened.
The walls,
the ceiling,
behind the toilet.
But I have a certain amount of more respect for him right now.
I like that. All right. That is unexpected, but I got to say it humanizes Mr. Felger a little more.
Yeah.
The fact that he got banged up a little bit.
Yeah. If you were taking bets before, and mm-hmm. you took out this show, because I was thinking about it. If you took
it's
bets,
us or the field, right?
No, it would be Jim Murray, I would imagine, but I don't know for a fact. Because Zolak normally, if it was in a non-Super Bowl situation, I would go Zolak. I'd almost go Zolak above anybody.
Yeah.
In a non-pocket pocket square.
But he's dialed in right now.
Yeah,
right.
He's dialed in. He's got the pocket square in. He's having fun. So
are we ranking what order of the Sports Hub crew would be most banged up to least banged up?
Well, you have to eliminate Hardy.
Yeah,
and then
that's
so
because he doesn't drink.
Yeah, and I Wallach is eliminated.
Let me think. I've never seen Bertrand really banged up. I've seen him have a drink. Yeah, I mean, but I guess anyone but us, I'd be a little shocked, to be quite honest.
Because I heard
I've never seen Maz, banged up.
Well, I've never hung out with Maz, but the thing is that Jim Murray, I guess when they were on that bus ride where they had to go from Boston all the way to Houston, I guess to ease the pain, Murray was sometimes going to whiskey early.
He would. We talked to them on the way down there, and they had that special hookup. Murray would say, "Yeah, it's 5 a.m. I just had some." He said this on the air with us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So Murray would not be out of the question.
Yeah, that was one of those situations I think for Murray where the first 12 hours of the trip on the bus was fine, and then after that he goes, realize I'm stuck on a bus.
Well, yeah.
And there's nothing else but being stuck on a bus.
And then you realize why every musician has gone through huge bouts of chemical dependence.
Right, right.
Because you're living
most of your life that way.
Yeah, in hell.
Yeah.
Going city to city. But we have not, I've enjoyed the area. I've not had trouble with the weather, but today is one of the days that you would die. if you were stuck outside. You would legitimately die. It is it's a negative what wind chill?
Negative 8. Walking in, it was a negative 8, and it's going to get a little bit worse than that today. Super Bowl Sunday is going to be really bad. Like, when you take a look at it, I think that's going to be the coldest of all the days. But it's that we maybe walked outside from our car to here for 90 seconds, and it feels like the skin is going to rip off your face. Any tiny bit of skin that's not covered, it feels like it's burning after about a minute. It's no joke up here, and I don't understand how people can live this way for months at a time. I mean, I know it gets cold in Boston. This is bat crap insane.
No, this is a different kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I went out with a friend of mine who lives here now, grew up in Brooklyn, I roomed with in college, and he was saying it's just a matter of a sliding scale. Like what we think is cold, what, like 20, 15
right.
degrees?
Of course.
He says he doesn't really think it's cold here until it's zero. And I said, well, I'm questioning your sanity for feeling that way, actually moving here, living here, and feeling that way, because that's not normal. It's not normal to think that zero is cold. It's normal to think the way we think it is.
He's a Nordic god from Brooklyn.
Yeah, right. He's sitting here explaining to me how he's adapted the cold. He said, you shouldn't have to adapt. You shouldn't have to live your life where you adapt like that to the weather. I don't understand that thinking.
Well, yesterday we went to Paisley Park. Prince's, of course, recording studio at his home at some points. And we had a tour director, someone who took us on the tour, so enlightened to the history of Prince.
She goes,
you know, look at this guitar, all right? Pretty cool. And over here you got, look at his outfit over there. You can't not like. The way that this is actually something you said. She said, you know, you can't not like that. The jacket, one side longer than the other, you know. That's pretty cool. So she would just walk around.
It was the last person you expected to give a tour at Paisley Park. Like, you know, first of all, I think the first requirement of giving a tour at Paisley Park was to, well, know something about Prince.
Right.
That
other than
with
the script
the
that you've memorized. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, drums.
Yeah. She goes, oh, this guitar right here is shaped like a heart, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, everything was pretty cool. She goes, you know, in this room is where they recorded the drums, you know, and there's a drum set in there. And you're like, yeah, so that's cool.
So we're walking down the hallways, and there's these gold records, you know, of all these Prince albums, but then you would see ones from other artists. Like, I saw, like, the Fine Young Cannibals, you know, that drives me crazy thing, and I was like, Fine Young Cannibals? I said, what did Prince have to do with the Fine Young Cannibals? He goes, oh, I bet he had something to do with it.
I said,
no. Did he produce it? Did he write the songs? Oh, he's all over all these. And you see it on the wall. He has something to do with it. And I said, yeah, but with the Fine Young Cannibals, because to me, I always thought it was kind of a mediocre song. Was Prince involved with that? And he goes, I'm sure he was in some sort of capacity.
You know, maybe he mixed it. Maybe he let him record it in the studio.
Like, thank you. And thank you for your... Oh, and then she kind of gave Fred a dirty look at one point. And by the way, these are the nicest people in the world. That's the one thing you'll say about people. Everyone's like...
No, she wasn't
guys.
Mean. She was stupid.
But there was one time where I think she was really confused by Fred. So you asked her about...
Okay, so there's a Prince album called The Scandalous Sex Suite. And it's true. It exists. And it's a 9-minute song, and he's having sex with Kim Basinger in the background. She's on the cover of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was released. I'm sure, like, it wasn't released on, you know, Warner Brothers or something.
But it's something a lot of people know about. Like,
it's something my friend has.
Prince legend.
My friend owns. It's out there. And I said, you know, what about the Scandalous Sex Suite? And she goes, no.
Ooh.
No,
ooh, what?
What? No, that didn't happen, no.
But the best is that she would say these things that she was expecting you to be, like, blown away. Well, first of all, it was really weird because you walk in, and the first thing you do is she goes, I just want to first make you guys aware that if you look up right above you, that miniature small-scale model of Paisley Park, that has Prince's ashes in it. So we're going to have a moment of silence.
She goes, don't get so sad.
For Prince.
She goes, like, don't get sad because this is a happy tour.
Yeah. So we're standing there awkwardly for a gratuitously long, like, minute. And she's just looking at us
20,
like, let it sink in.
The ashes are 20 feet in the air. and you're thinking, like, you know, I'm aware of his death. I didn't know him or anything.
But she's expecting us to cry. She goes, I know it's a very heavy moment. Like, but she's, like, looking at us during the moment of silence. I'm like, Okay.
And then
he's dead.
But the funniest and we all like Prince. But the funniest thing is she's like, you know, the last thing he was working on was this jazz thing.
Oh, yes.
And she goes, okay. She goes, check it out.
Never before released. Are you guys ready?
Are you ready?
This is something special.
And she plays 30 seconds of Diarrhea.
It's noodling. It's him and like three guys just like, it sounds like they're just messing around, like tuning up. Like, dint, 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 dint. And she stops it and she goes, that's something special, ain't it?
Yeah, you just heard that.
Yeah.
That just went through your ears.
She goes, what'd you think? And by the way, I was the only one answering because it was me, Fred, and Walk, and these like, three gumps that were with us. I don't know. I mean, they probably thought we were gumps. But it was very just a very strange crew that we went with. She would stop. There was a piano that Prince had that he would press a button and like the top of it would open like with a hydraulic thing. And she goes, you know, there's only 14 of these in the world. And she would do this thing with her eyebrows. You're like, cool. When do we see his bedroom?
Drop the mic. 14
boom.
Of them. Thank you.
She got mad at Fred because he went to the bathroom at one point.
Oh, God.
Oh, that was at the end. That's right.
No, I think we lost someone. Oh, red alart. Oh, no.
He's
rolling around in Prince's bedsheet somewhere.
You can go to the Louvre and like take a picture of the Mona Lisa, they put your phone in something that you can't open.
Yeah. It's like a pouch that has like a little like latch on it that you get to keep, which was fantastic because I put they only let you take, and you don't take it. You pay $10 to have them take one photo, and they say it's in front of like Prince's piano and stuff, but when you see the picture, it's literally in front of a picture of Prince. You can't see anything else that's in there. And so, but the best part about this is I posted this last night, and out of Fred's pocket, you can see the top of this special phone pouch. And people were saying, A, what's Fred doing rocking a Discman? And then the other people were saying, whoa, that is an awesome move. Fred showed up with a flask. So it looks like Fred's rocking a flask in the photo.
Listen, I'm a bad boy. I can't help it.
But that's great. Yeah, this is the one photo you get, and it's like us in front of a giant Prince head. You can't see literally anything that's going on.
That was in the studio that he recorded music, and that's a historical thing, but it could be in a closet. You have no idea.
Flash photography, you know. You're going to get that cool guitar all messed up.
You're right. You can take a photo of the Mona effing Lisa.
Yes. They encourage you not to.
But you can't take a picture of, you know, the the stunt motorcycle Prince drove in Purple Rain.
All right. Rich, what are some things we'll discuss from what happened last night?
Celtics put a beat down on the Knicks, but there is some news that we're going to have to ask Danny Ainge about involving a potential new Celtic. And on top of that, it sounds like Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft sat down and talked about tension in the organization and didn't do a ton to alleviate concerns from Patriots fans.
All right, here's the CBS Sports Minute with Boomer Esiason, brought to you by Plymouth Rock Assurance. Boomer says at least the NFL will look into the catch-no-catch rule this offseason.
Listen on the new 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Toucher and Rich are live on Radio Row. Presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed with Toucher and Rich.
Last night.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. We are on Media Row here at the Super Bowl. Rich, what happened last evening?
Well, no Kyrie, no Marcus Smart, no problem. Clip.
Rozier grabs the rebound, and boy, Porzingis has been very aggressive, taking 8 shots in 11 minutes. Jaylen Brown dribbles.
Oh, Hardaway elevates over Porzingis, and if you think a unicorn is rare, how about that move from Jaylen Brown? He flies over him and throws it down.
Oh, my God. That's why the unicorns are this stink now. He just got smashed by a runaway truck.
All right.
Seven. Okay.
All right, first
unicorns
of all.
Unicorns are distinct.
All right, hang on. Hang on. There's two things there. Unicorns are distinct.
They're distinct.
And also, even if he says it right, unicorns are extinct as if
they
ever existed on the planet. And the idea that it takes them. He's formulating these words over the course of about 10 seconds, and this is what he comes up with. Play it again, please.
Rozier grabs the rebound, and boy, Porzingis has been very aggressive, taking 8 shots in 11 minutes. Jaylen Brown dribbles.
Oh, Hardaway elevates over Porzingis, and if you think a unicorn is rare, how about that move from Jaylen Brown? He flies over him and throws it down.
Oh, my God. That's why the unicorns are this I stink now. He just got smashed by a runaway truck.
Seven.
I think that Cedric Maxwell believes unicorns existed.
We should ask him that. When did they go distinct?
He's like really into climate change, and he's like, you'll have to recall what they did to the unicorn.
Well, listen,
this big asteroid came and killed all of them.
Those
and the dinosaurs.
No, Leviticus 3:19 states, and then there were no unicorns.
No, as the song says, you know, Noah just forgot to load them up.
It left them on the shore. I understand.
You know,
so I wonder if Cedric Maxwell ever believed he was riding a unicorn.
Who knows? All I know is that was pretty phenomenal. He dunked right on Porzingis. and that was a very distinct slam dunk. There were only three other times this year that Kyrie Irving did start for the Celtics, all three resulting in losses. Last night, however, resulted in an ass-kicking. 103-73, the final score over the Knicks. This meant that Terry Rozier got the starting nod for the first time in his professional career, and he absolutely killed it. Clip.
Tice, straight away. Rozier wants it back. Left-hand dribble, Rozier floats it up for Tice, throws it down with two hands, and Terry Rozier, in his first NBA start, has a triple-double. 16 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Celtics by 29 and a steal. Rozier comes out of the pack, lead for Tatum, ahead to Rozier. He'll take it in himself, miss the layup, but get fouled by Harden.
Terry Rozier has done everything except bake the doggone cookies tonight.
Yep, he has.
That's right.
And those were distinct cookies. 17 points, 11 rebounds, and 10 assists, all leading to the biggest throttling of opponent for the Celtics all season long. There was, however, one scary moment when an already depleted team took another hit. Clip.
Beasley strips the ball by Morris. He'll get there first. Marcus Morris racing with Burke, keeps it away from him, slams it two hands, and gets undercut by Beasley and lands hard. And immediately, Marcus Morris reaches around towards his back.
Now, let's see what the Knicks want to take the ball out of bounds.
Because the officials are not stopping the play. Because they didn't call a foul. And finally, an intentional foul in the backcourt, and the crowd is furious.
But the rules are you cannot stop the play. When he fell, if there was no foul, the ball is still live. The Knicks kicked the ball in. You got the foul then.
Yeah, that was strange. As Marcus Morris was slamming the ball, Michael Beasley came in from behind him and hit him on the back of his head with an elbow. And you know what? Unlike most people, I don't think he was guilty of doing it on purpose. What I do know is that he is guilty of having the world's corniest tattoo across his back that says Super Cool Bees in gigantic gothic letters. That is an actual tattoo. Yeah. He used the word super cool to go from shoulder blade to shoulder blade, but Marcus fell hard and was taken off the court for the remainder of the game. But not before, while he was writhing in pain, the Knicks tried to get off that awkward offensive possession and gun it down the court for an attempted bucket after hesitating for several seconds while they looked at Morris like lying in the pile. And then they're like, they're not stopping the play.
Very weird.
We're going to, I can't even blame them because the refs never blew the whistle.
Sure.
What are you supposed to do at that point? But I mean, it just looked really bad. Like, I mean, no one stopped
anything.
He's
lying down there. If there are teammates checking on him, and the Knicks are trying to get a 3-on-1 up the floor.
And also, it wasn't one of those situations where you see someone like flop and you're like, all right. I mean, everyone saw how bad this fall was. Matter of fact, I am shocked it wasn't, ended up not being as worse than it was. It was very strange. So here's Marcus Morris, who actually spoke on his condition afterwards.
You know what? I was kind of like swinging to get off the rim, and when he hit me, I was already, you know, swinging, so I just let the rim go because I didn't know he was behind me. I was sore, but, you know, I'm going on my ice, see how I feel tomorrow. Doc said it might be 48 hours, so, you know, it might go away tomorrow, you know, it might linger, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, he was asked, what are you going to do? And he goes, I just got to ice my ass. He said it works every time. So the old ice his ass method.
Oh, he's got to ice his ass.
Yes, a distinct icing on his ass. Well, as far as Terry Rozier, he has to be glad that he crushed his first appearance ever as a starter. Clip.
Actually, I came in for treatment on my ankle this morning. I seen Brad, and he told me, be ready to start tonight. And I'm just thinking, like, okay. Yeah. But, you know, I've just been in my mind all day, like, just be aggressive from the start, and you know, it's my first career start, so that's all. I'm just telling myself just to be aggressive, and you know, like I said, it was a great night.
Well, some other NBA news that could affect the Celtics. Greg Monroe has agreed to a contract buyout with the Phoenix Suns, clearing the way for him to become an unrestricted free agent. According to reports, the Celtics and the Pelicans have strong interest. Those teams seem to be the two teams that he would most likely land. Boston has the advantage because they can use part of that exception that everyone's been waiting for them to use for Gordon Hayward. $8.4 million they got signed around, so that they've got the ability to pay him more than most teams who could only offer him the veteran minimum.
The only problem with that is the Celtics can't give him the minutes New Orleans can. And New Orleans is a playoff team right now. Anyways, they may fall off because DeMarcus Cousins isn't there. But if New Orleans gets Monroe, they probably start him, and he plays 30 to 35 minutes a night.
Though he sucks?
Even though he's basically a pinch player. But if he comes here, he's not going to start, and he'll play 15 or 20 minutes a game.
It's funny. There was at one time a debate whether you keep Drummond or Monroe.
Right.
That was an actual debate that was going on.
I mean, that's
and then
crazy
Monroe
talk.
Went somewhere else, and Drummond started posting 2020s, and that was the end of the debate.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this season, he's averaged a career low 6.8 points and 5 rebounds in limited minutes when he was with the Milwaukee Bucks, and then, of course, the trade that happened. But Monroe, during his 5 seasons with the Pistons, averaged almost 14 points and 9 rebounds. Now, Monroe, however, has killed the Celtics.
I think
that's the one thing.
That's why Danny has to be careful. You know, this guy tortures us, so we might as well go get him. In reality, it might be the matchup. I don't know. Monroe is a dinosaur in that he doesn't shoot perimeter shots. We were talking about Al Horford.
Yeah,
we were talking about Al Horford, who 4 years ago saw the future of the league and started taking threes. Monroe never did that.
And he can't.
He's the epitome of a low post exclusive player.
He physically can't do it.
Yeah, that's a dinosaur in today's NBA.
Yeah. Well, you should have seen Paul Pierce's reaction last night. You know, he was on ESPN, and he was like, well, he can't shoot the three. He's had an unimpressive year. I'm sure there's probably still a place in the league for him. Didn't sound like the most ringing endorsement.
No, he's not good.
He's being phased out.
Yeah, he's
guys like him are being phased out of the NBA.
Well, I guess
he can't shoot free throws. He can't shoot from the perimeter. He can't shoot three-pointers.
He is a guy who will get you rebounds and get you putbacks.
Who all of a sudden, under Brad Stevens, will be shooting 50% for the three-point
line. Correct.
That's right.
Exactly.
He'll just completely shrink
the guy's hands.
He got Kyrie to play defense, so
that's a mental thing.
Well,
you can't shrink a man's hands.
If you're Brad Stevens, you can.
Monroe, like, he's not built to do that. All right, we will have the headlines and be right back.
From the food court at Mall of America, Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Live from Minneapolis on Radio Row.
Wake up, wake up.
Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance on the home of the game, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich from the Media Row here in what is this? Bloomington, Minnesota. Be listening this morning at 6:50 for your chance to score a $100 gift card to the Under Armour Brady House on Boylston Street. Under Armour makes you better, Boston. That's coming up at 6:50.
Well, earlier this week, Robert and Jonathan Kraft sat down with Andrea Kramer for an interview, and things started off right where the Seth Wickersham article left off. When she asked about the relationship between the Krafts, Belichick, and Brady, and said, is there tension in the organization? Here's what they had to say. Clip.
Your word at the end of the Parcells tenure, dysfunction. Is there dysfunction in the organization now?
No. No.
There's no dysfunction.
No, wait.
Zero.
You have tension. I think tension, a certain amount of tension, helps make great things happen.
Dysfunction is when people take energy and use it to think about how to undermine other people. That does not happen. If it happens in this organization, I haven't seen it.
You know, Robert Kraft isn't doing a lot to squash any of the feelings that people are getting from that article. Like, remember about a week ago, he said that we all need to sit down and have our egos in check. There was that comment that kind of raised an eyebrow. And then that one right there, whereas Jonathan sounds like, no, 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 there's nothing going on. Robert goes, well, there's tension, and you're wondering what kind of tension you might be speaking of. He's just not doing, if they want this to go away, all the talk about the three of them together, or if they want to just deny it and move on, it seems like Robert's kind of still fanning the flames a little bit every time he's speaking.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't want that to go away.
Why? Like, what would be the benefit?
Because it keeps the narrative off of other things that could be happening. I mean, what does he care? I mean, if Belichick's still the coach and Brady's still the quarterback and he's still the owner, what does he care?
Well, I mean, the only... Boy, this is such a superficial reason, but the only thing that I would reason that I'd want that narrative to continue if it indeed wasn't, if everything was fine, was what we said, is that there's more interest in the Patriots. It's like the this could be the last run
yes,
type of feeling.
That's precisely what it is. And think of how much better this is for the organization than, like,
just
the
another
deflated
one of
footballs or Spygate or something like that. Like, this keeps...
But that article made... If you believed that article 100%, it didn't make Robert Kraft look that good because it made it sound like he got involved in football decisions. And that's the one thing that Belichick doesn't want.
That was the problem in the first place.
That was the problem
Parcells.
In the first place.
Yeah.
But, you know, why... Do you say there's tension? It keeps a soap opera-like atmosphere around those guys.
So they've all kind of agreed to kind of...
I don't know if they've agreed to it. I just think Robert Kraft probably is like, why not? And then Jonathan Kraft says a different... They're toying with everybody. There's a difference between tension and dysfunction. Tension, you know, can breed greatness.
Or maybe. I don't know if that would be enough of a reason.
That's a fine line
that.
You're walking, ultimately,
okay,
if that's the way you want
to do it. Is Belichick coming back?
Yes. I believe so, yes.
Okay, is Brady coming back?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Brady's definitely coming back.
So what's the difference? I mean, you know, have some fun with the thing.
I don't know. You put it this way. Is Brady coming back? Yes. Is Belichick coming back? 90% yes. I still think that.
If you keep up, the question you ask yourself is this going to shut things up?
Shut up. Shut your mouth. If they thought there was a chance that Belichick...
It was an Anchorman moment, by the way.
Yeah. You shut that gap. All right, listen to me. We're going hard on the gap in the first half hour of the show.
Good gap talk.
If there was a chance Belichick was going to leave, why wouldn't he squash it? Like, how does that help? If he wants Belichick to stay, how does this help? Seeing that there's tension.
Maybe he doesn't know. And maybe he's being honest. Maybe Bill has not been committed to saying whether or not he wants to leave at the end of the year. You know what I mean? Maybe they've had that conversation.
Can he leave?
He can retire. He doesn't have to go to a different organization. He can retire.
I don't know the terms of his contract. I'm sorry. I'm on the speaker.
Okay. I'll let it go this time.
Thank you.
I saw Wallach shopping his favorite store yesterday.
The Gap.
Yeah, here you go.
Cut you right off at the pass there, boy. Didn't I? That's genius.
Sorry.
Genius.
A lot of Gap talk. I just found that interesting. I just of all the stuff that's out there and all the people saying there's no truth to any of this, the one guy that could really do the best job squashing all of this would be Robert Kraft, and he hasn't done that. Now Jonathan has said, you know,
right.
things, but Robert is not. So
I think the article's true. I think that everything that was in the article is true.
You think that Robert Kraft went to Bill Belichick and told him to trade Jimmy Garoppolo?
I think that Belichick was in a position that he felt like he had to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo.
And Belichick feels like that somebody stepped into his territory.
Right. And he felt that Belichick was probably not told directly, but Belichick was told that Brady was their quarterback for the foreseeable future.
And the other part of it is, and I'm sure we're going to get to this in a second, did not Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft just tell Andrea Kramer that Brady gets to decide when he steps aside?
Let's do it. Play the clip.
Can you envision a scenario where you're the one that has to tell Tom Brady it's time to retire as a Patriot?
I think Tom Brady's earned the right to have that be a decision he makes when he wants to make it.
Our intent is we have the best people in their respective positions, and we keep them here for a very long time.
Keeping that in mind, does that not lend credence to Kraft going to Belichick and saying Brady's the quarterback
for
as long as he wants? You have to get rid of Garoppolo.
It certainly fits the narrative.
Against the coach's wishes, because the coach wants to sub in new guys. But doesn't that lend credence to the Wickersham article?
Here's the deal, though, is that he didn't have to. The part of the article that everyone's saying is that Kraft went up to Belichick and said, trade Garoppolo. The situation could be, listen, I want Brady to retire a Patriot, and that ties the hands of Belichick, and Belichick realizes he can't keep both, so he has to give... It's semantics, but there is a difference.
Well, you could franchise him.
Yeah, but that whole system, but then they would have franchised him and they would have had to trade him, and then that makes things more. Listen, the way, sure, you could have franchised him and got rid of him anyway. I mean, you're not franchising him. You're not, that's fair, but you're not franchising him 2 years in a row. I mean, you're not going to franchise him 2 years in a row and have that amount of cap space. What was the franchise on Cousins? It was something like
23
or something?
No, it was like 34.
This would be the third time they tagged him.
Oh, you're saying for the third
and
year.
You can't move him after the third tag. It was like $34 million.
Yeah, it was an astronomical amount of money, and Washington was never going to do it.
Well, this is another thing that, you know, unfortunately adds more fuel to the flames of the Wickersham article is they asked Robert Kraft, will Bill Belichick be back? And here was his answer, clip.
Do you have any question that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will be back as Patriots next season?
I appreciate you asking that question, and I'm not going to respond to it. You'll just have to see for yourself.
Why not say yes?
Because he doesn't want to speak for Belichick. Because then again, he's speaking for Belichick. But
don't you think that through all this, Bill would have told him that, yeah, I'm here next year.
Doesn't matter.
And Bill has said he's going to come back.
Okay, fine. But Kraft has seen what that show it was after he, you know, made the request to have Brady be here, so he doesn't want to put words in Belichick's mouth. Let Belichick say it, not him. He's made it clear that he wants him.
It was interesting, but boy, this is the story that won't die.
Because it was true.
And you know what? And it has made the Super Bowl more interesting. That's the one thing that you can say about all of this is it gives it a little more meaning because there is that tiny bit of doubt.
There is a tiny bit of doubt.
That this might be the last ride.
I will give you that. But I think that, certainly with the Belichick thing, I think that Kraft's being very careful not to start, you know, making decisions for him and putting, you know, saying, yes, he'll be back because, you know, ultimately it's Belichick's decision. All right, we will return, and we will have more of everything that happened last evening.
Gap to John! Gap to John!
Live from Minneapolis on Radio Row, Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mm-hmm. Well, on our way back from getting a tour of Paisley Park by the most Minnesotan Minnesotan that there's ever been.
Hang on 1 second, by the way. This hour of Touchroom Rich is brought to you by ACP Facility Services.
This guitar is purple. He had three of them just like it.
Pretty cool.
But you're seeing a real one right here. That's pretty sweet.
Don't ask me any questions.
No follow-ups.
About the Prince records or anything. I just know about the artifacts here in the museum.
That was the best. I said, wow, Fine Young Cannibals, what did Prince do with that out? Oh, I'm sure he had something to do with it. Yeah, but he's got the record on the wall. Oh, yeah, he was involved with a lot of different artists. Yep, now, I'll tell you something.
Now turn your attention to the little outfits he used to wear. They're pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I bet you, didn't you try to tell us that, like, Prince was 5'6 or something like that?
No, Prince was actually 6'8. You know, he just liked to wear little clothes.
It's all lighting.
He's like, you ever seen that movie, The Guy, the Ant-Man? He kind of like that, had a magical power. He could shrink and put himself into keyholes and things, but not in real life. He's 5'6, about as tall as you or me, and you're looking at just like this diminutive little costume. Yeah. All right. Listen, I'll tell you what. Nothing like having a tour guide at Prince's Paisley Park and knew nothing about Prince or Paisley Park. But was just a delight. So yesterday, Tom Brady, back to us leaving Paisley Park, we get in the car and John goes on Twitter and says, whoa, Tom Brady's been bitten by a dog.
Yeah, that's right.
We're like, what? Yeah. He goes, yeah, apparently Tom Brady, there's a story just came out about him getting bitten by a dog. And we're like, what the hell happened? And then like 5 minutes later in the car, he goes, oh, apparently this woman who's reporting it said that was something that happened a long time ago, but she didn't put that in her original tweet.
No, she
said. So here's Tom Brady yesterday.
What a timely story.
Yeah, it's like, well, thanks. So and for a minute I was like, well, the first 2 hours of the show are done.
Yeah.
She's just going to have people panicking, calling it.
Yeah.
So here is Tom Brady telling a story about, I guess, getting a chunk taken out of his leg by a dog.
Yeah, I was bitten by two dogs. One when I was little in Minnesota, my grandpa's farm here. Yeah, I gave the dog a bone and then went down to give the dog a kiss. I was young, and he bit right through my lip. So that was pretty rough. And then the second dog bite, which you're referring to, we were in the stadium. This was, I don't know how many years ago. There was some military training going on in our stadium. Mr. Kraft had allowed, you know, some military members to do some training that they needed to do, and I was able to witness it at night. It was during training camp. We got a chance to go on the field after and meet a lot of the guys. I was walking out to the middle of the field, and there's helicopters flying, and everyone's lined up. You know, some guys were kind of excited to see us walk out, so I kind of was close to all the guys and didn't realize there was dogs. And obviously, those weren't, you know, like Labradors, you know, those were tough dogs. I raised my arms up, like, you know, over my head. And right when I raised my arm up, the dog jumped up and I guess was going for my neck. And the guy grabbed the dog back down and the dog got my thigh on the way down. I was standing there with a bunch of tough guys and they all saw it. And they're like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course I'm okay." But I could feel the cut. But obviously, I couldn't say anything. Like, "Oh, man, that hurt," you know, because I'm with, like, the toughest guys in the world.
Yeah, so, it was Steve Burton who asked the original question?
Yes, that's correct.
How about that? So, yeah, so for...
So the question was what?
I heard a story about you getting bit by a dog, and he was like, "How the hell did you know that?" He goes, "All right."
Because of my inside sources.
I guess so. The
Burton
dog
knows these things.
And maybe he saw the scar when Guerrero was jamming on his leg in the last episode of Tom vs. Time.
By the way, the obviously a fan of ZZ Top, I was trying to give the dog the bone.
That's AC/DC, baby. Giving the dog a bone.
There you have it.
Mm-hmm. So Bill Belichick was asked about Gronk's status, even though we saw him at the Microsoft store right down the hall from here with flashing lights and everything. That's a gentleman that obviously not in a concussion protocol anymore. And here's what Belichick spilled the beans clip.
He's practice. Limited in practice. Yes, he's limited today.
And he's still in the protocol?
Yes. Well, it has not been cleared, right?
Okay, well, that's good. But he's playing video games at the Microsoft store. Belichick was then asked a question from a German reporter, and Belichick made a little funny clip.
Coach Patrick Izumi from German TV ProSieben. Now, a key matchup will be probably Patrick Chung against Zach Ertz. Do you have any plans of providing some help with him, put a bracket on him, or you trust Patrick Chung to do it all by himself?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're really going to get into our game plans and all that. We'll see how it goes. Next. Okay, it's the first time I've been asked the question by a German reporter that wasn't about Sebastian Vollmer.
All right. Next. I don't think I've ever heard him say next. Like, that's like next level, like, condescension.
Yeah.
Next.
You know, he's a history buff, and he's not a huge fan of German history.
Apparently not. And I just want to end it with this clip, because, and we have Burt Beer coming on in just a moment, and we'll talk a little bit about what all went down with Roger Goodell, but my favorite moment of the entire press conference, other than the frustrated text that I got from Michael Hurley saying, "Shot down in flames once again."
Oh, he didn't get it in.
No, no, no. And he tried, and he staked it out and everything.
What the hell did he want to bitch about this time?
What is he not going
to
bitch
about?
He's Michael Hurley.
Does it matter?
Like, it's listen, there's no sun without the darkness. You know, you need like two different, it's Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, all right? The two of them are going to go head-to-head.
No, in all honesty, what was his problem with Goodell this time?
Come on. You don't think he didn't have... He showed me. He like had like a 150-word question ready to go. And I guess that Goodell... And we've talked about his press conferences in the past. But this year, apparently, there is... He had a book with pictures of the different reporters and who they represent. So when his handler could look out and he could see who is from where and who they can trust to ask the right type of question. I think the word concussion wasn't even thrown out there yesterday during the entire press conference. I think Kaepernick was brought up once. But this is the kind of question you get on Super Bowl week when Roger Goodell, rather, walks out on stage putting on his best game face. The hard-hitting questions, take it away.
Yes.
Hi, Commissioner Ertner. My name is Manasseh Yerboina. I'm the NFL Play 60 Super Kid. My question to you is, many people look up to you as a role model and inspiration. Do you have a inspiration or role model you look up to?
Well, that's very nice. I would tell you that I've been very fortunate in my life to have a lot of role models.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Like the bartender at the bar where I took down that guy with the gun.
You are a huge role model and someone that everyone looks up to.
Well, listen,
kid looks up to Roger Goodell?
Well, if you watch the Disney Channel, he's always popping on as...
he's the nosy neighbor?
Yeah, no, he's just like, "Oh my God, it's Roger Goodell."
Right.
It's like Hard Day's Night with the kids. You're a blood person a lot of people look up to. That's right. A lot of kids are like, let's see, firemen, Tom Brady and a businessman.
Right, and a guy who runs this organization.
Yeah, like I would like the money. All right, you got to get out. You got to get out there and talk to these mall walkers.
I will. I'll let you do the first couple minutes of the bird.
Any ski poles? Have you seen any ski poles?
No. They were full on like cross country ski poles yesterday from some mall walkers.
Okay, I'll do the first break of bird, and then you got to find.
See, I want to find one near here because I want to introduce
some guy.
Just wait 5 minutes. I keep walking by. You'll be fine.
All right, you got to start talking to some mall walkers.
How about this? We'll start the break. I need you guys over in production because you can see behind me. The minute you see somebody who's like ripe, like, you know, like, I'm talking someone just feeling it, feeling the mall walk, let me know and I will jump out and talk to them.
All right.